Well, welcome. This is a landmark panel. We don't know that any panel like this has existed at any conference anywhere. And we're very grateful to KidScreen for hosting this and being really supportive from day one. We have a lot of territory to cover, so we're going to keep the introductions short so we can get to the meat, because there's a lot of information to cover. There's a lot of great shows. There's a lot of movement forward. And we're very excited today to talk about representation of LGBT characters for kids in media today. So to my left here, I have Sarah Kate Ellis, CEO of GLAAD, who will be talking about a variety of things, but in particular, the new award for kids and family television that GLAAD has announced recently, which is an extraordinary leap forward. And we have Terry Minsky, creator and executive producer of Andy Mac. Which generated tremendous press off of a very courageous storyline and a very touching storyline that launched this fall. We have Chris Nee, executive producer of Doc McStuffins and Vampirina on Disney. And I think Chris is a strong personality. And yes. And it's so remarkable that she's been able to accomplish the things that she has and incorporate LGBT representations in preschool shows. Mm-hmm. We also have Kevin Sullivan from The Loud House on Nickelodeon. And we're going to be able to show some clips of the wonderful LGBT characters that The Loud House has been incorporating. And we have Linda Siminski, VP Children's Programming from PBS Kids, as our elder statesman, and can talk about the road to LGBT inclusion and some of the bumps along the road that you've encountered. All right, so first we're going to share a few clips about the shows we're going to talk about today, because I think the really remarkable thing is that there's been a sea change in the last few years, and there has been LGBT characters in kids' television, and that is new. And it's especially exciting that the traditional broadcast linear networks are the ones who are doing it. It's not the streaming services. Mm-hmm. It's the regular networks that are making the courageous decisions to do the right thing. So first up, we have a clip from Andy Mack. Set that up first, Terry.
I'm supposed to set this up. It's Cyrus's bar mitzvah. He's told exactly one person that, well, he hasn't said the word gay. He's told exactly one person that he has a crush on Jonah, and now he's about to tell a second.
That is very complicated.
It's very complicated.
Somebody else likes Jonah.
Oh, I thought that we would leave that for the clip.
I love that clip.
Thank you.
Anyways, so please roll the clip.
Aha! There you are. I have news. I've just spoken to Jonah, and according to him, you two have not broken up.
Oh, really? Then where is he? He isn't looking for me. He can't even sit next to me. He's probably in there talking to some other girl. Is he? You know, this isn't your problem. You should be at your bar mitzvah party. And you should be in there too.
And so should you.
I can't be in the same room as him right now.
I know how you feel.
No, you don't. But be grateful, because it's severe.
You're wondering if he even knows you're there. Or cares.
Yes.
I know exactly how you feel.
Cyrus?
She's my best friend. I want her to know she's not alone.
What do you mean I'm not alone?
Andy, you're not the only one who likes Jonah. I like him too. She's not getting it. Okay, now she's getting it.
Cyrus!
Hi.
Did you know? He's so frustrating, isn't he?
I spend way too much time trying to deconstruct his facial expressions.
Yeah, all two of them. Is it weird that I feel a lot better?
Just another service we provide.
I just have to imagine if I, as a 12-year-old boy, had this to watch, how the course of my teenage years, as tortured as they were, would have been so different. Next up, from Chris, we have a clip from Doc McStuffins.
I mean, I would just say what we're all leading to is that, and the real takeaway about the Doc McStuffins episode is it's about emergency preparedness. That's what it's about. It's not about them being a same-sex couple. And I remember last year at a panel about diversity, somebody said, how would you identify a same-sex couple on a preschool show? And I said, by calling them each mom. That's how you do it. It's two moms. So here it is.
Oh, no! Our home!
Whoa, 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 ma'am. You cannot go in there. It's not safe.
But Gertie needs her bottle, and Brandon doesn't have any shoes.
Don't you have those in your emergency kits?
Emergency kits? You know, the one you made when you made your emergency plan. You don't have an emergency plan, do you?
Truth is, I don't either.
This lammy is planless.
It's important to have a kit that has everything you need in case you have to leave your house quickly.
And you want to have a good place to meet, so if you get separated, you can find each other.
Well, that sure would have been helpful today.
Yeah, having an emergency plan makes a lot of sense.
Aww.
That casting. And next up, from Kevin, we have two short clips from Loud House.
Yeah, two really quick ones. The first is Lincoln preparing for his very first sleepover ever. His best friend Clyde is walking over with his parents, and it's only when they get to the door that we reveal that he has two dads. And the second clip is from an episode called L is for Love, where the kids find a love letter addressed to L Loud. They're all initialed L Loud, so they start imagining which one of them it's for. And throughout the episode, Lincoln's sister Luna goes on and on about somebody named Sam, and eventually decides at the end of the episode, in the clip you're going to see, that instead of waiting for a love letter, why don't they all send love letters to the people that they have crushes on? And that's when we get our first look at Sam.
All that's missing now? My guest. Come in, Little Bo Sleep. This is Slumberjack. What's your location?
This is Little Bo Sleep. My parents are welcoming me over now.
Prepare for contact. In 3, 2, 1.
This is it. Time to make history.
Hey, Clyde. Hi, Mr. McBride. Hi, Mr. McBride.
Hi, Lincoln. Ready for your big night?
You bet.
Great. Just a couple things Clyde will need. Sleeping bag, feetsy pajamas, white noise machine, humidifier, dehumidifier, earplugs, inhaler, and allergy medication. Here are all the numbers where you can reach us if our cell phones fail. Restaurant, movie theater, coffee shop, gas station. In case we have to pee.
Good idea. And here's a photo of us. Since we can't tuck you in tonight.
Remember, Clyde, no nuts, no gluten, no sugar, and be careful with orange juice. You know how you get with pulp.
He's growing up so fast.
Come on, Howie. Remember what Dr. Lopez said about letting go. Now let go.
I love him so much.
Have fun, Clyde.
Oh, we will.
See you later, Sam.
Okay, see ya.
Now, you might be wondering why I'm moderating, because I have no content to show. But I am pleased to announce that we are starting writing on our first special, which will feature a lesbian character coming out, and does it to one of her friends, and does it at the dinner table with her friends. And you can sort of guess some of the characters from this. But at the dinner table at a friend's house, and her friend has conservative Muslim parents. And we thought that would be an interesting and really surprising dynamic to see play out. And we're very proud of that. But that's a ways off. In the meantime, these creators are in the front lines doing significant work. And so what I wanted to, I'll start with Kevin here. And this is rather an obvious question, but I think we all need to answer it in our own ways. Why is representation in the media so important to LGBTQ kids?
I think it's significant. As you just said, watching the Andy Mack clip, that if you as a 12-year-old boy saw that, your life would be completely different. And I'm the same way. We grew up in the, probably close to the same era. I'm probably older than you. But yeah, and even I read an article last night about an author watching these gay Olympians win gold and bronze medals and saying the exact same thing. If I were watching this as a 10-year-old, how would that have changed my life? I grew up in a small town in Connecticut, and it's only now that we've reconnected on Facebook that I realized that half of my friend group in high school were gay. None of us said it, none of us talked about it, none of us knew, but there was no talking about it. And now, to be able to see yourself on all forms of kids' television, from preschool into the tween years into high school, I think is so significant. We get letters from kids who I got a letter from two dads, one African-American, one white, and they have a little girl, and they saw the press on that episode with Clyde before it came out, so they sat down to watch it with their daughter. She didn't know it was coming. And when Lincoln opens the door, she turned to her dads and said, Clyde's family looks like our family. And I have that letter and a picture of them hanging up in my office, because that was the first time I realized how important it is that we do this. Not just so that gay and lesbian and transgender and bisexual kids can see themselves represented, but so that straight kids in families with two same-sex parents can also see themselves reflected. It's so significant. When we aired the Ellis for Love episode, we watched it as a crew, and we were walking back to the conference room, and our social media director ran up to me and said, it's already exploding. You know, we haven't even gotten out of the conference room yet. And, you know, within an hour, Sam and Luna had a couple's name. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, and I get fan art from people all the time. So I think people are just relieved to be able to say, hey, that's me.
And I have a question later about reactions from the audience, and we'll talk about that as well.
I just want to say, well, first of all, like you, I mean, I came out in 1987. Elton John wasn't out then. So that just gives you a little bit of historical context. I will tell you, the first time I knew who I was watching Cher in Silkwood, and that is not what you should be identifying. I remember going, well, that's me. This is obvious, but I just want to say it especially, and thank you for our straight allies who are here. We need you to be a part of this conversation. When you are coming out, we all know that we need to see ourselves and that diversity matters across all platforms, and obviously there are so many different parts of that conversation. For us, we are often coming out and afraid to come out to our own families. You are alone in your family, and you're afraid of losing your family. And that's still the case today, and obviously there's been a lot of doubling down. I think if you're Asian or African American, you're fighting a battle out there, but you're doing it with your family. So it can be the most singularly isolating thing to think you might lose your actual family. And you're not getting that representation in your own day-to-day life. You might be the only person you know. And that's where we have the ability to reach out and say, you might be in Tennessee, and you might actually not know anyone else. You probably do, but you don't know anyone else who is gay. We exist. We're out here. So it's so, so important.
I'll just say to that also that it really comes down to the numbers. The suicide rate for youth, LGBTQ youth, the homeless rate, the sex trafficking rate because they lose their homes when they come out, the unemployment rate for LGBTQ people, especially even at a young age when they're first trying to get their own jobs, their first jobs. So it's not only effective feeling isolated, it's actually the isolation becomes the only thing you know. And so we have disproportionate amounts of attempted suicide and suicide rate with LGBTQ youth. And shows like this matter because it stops it. It actually saves lives because people see themselves or see that there's hope out there, that there's someone like them, and they can live another day. Literally, I've heard it from kids who have watched these shows. So I think it even goes beyond just identifying, and it literally saves lives to be able to tell different people's stories.
That's the most beautiful point. I'm fortunate to be on the event and fundraising committee for GLSEN. Mm-hmm. And GLSEN works very hard to get into public schools across the country, but it is a slog. I mean, it is one school at a time, and there are so many schools they're not going to be able to get into. But TV is everywhere.
TV is everywhere.
So the next question is, how is LGBTQ representation different in tone, execution, and content than representation for adults? And how is it different for kids of all ages? And Sarah Kate, I know that you guys have done a little research into this, and would the slides be appropriate at this time?
Sure, I could talk about more globally why it's so important right now, and why we ended up finally, the media awards, so GLAAD has media awards, which are LA and New York based, and we reward fair and accurate inclusion of LGBTQ characters, usually in the movies, TV shows, and we have struggled for years to have a kids category. There simply wasn't the content for it. And a couple of years ago, or last year, we had a special recognition for Steven Universe, and then Chris got in touch with me and was like, I think the kids creators are ready to move, are ready to make a big difference. And if you guys put a carrot out there, I think it could really help people move the needle. And so this is the first year that we have a kids and family programming category. And it's the first year we have enough content for it. So we have 5 nominations. And they're all sitting up here. But that being said, it's extraordinary. Because this is actually the first year, if you want to parallel it, we have 5 nominations in that category. In wide release film, it's the first year we've ever had 5 nominations on that level, too. So just to give you some context around this. And I think that if you did want to show the slides, I think one of them is about the world we live in today. One of the biggest things is that we do an annual study called Accelerating Acceptance, which is measuring culture in America. So, you know, we always were asking, are you for or against marriage equality? And that's not really an indicator of the lived experience. Are you comfortable having somebody who's LGBTQ living next to you, being on your kid's soccer team? And that's really where our hearts and mind in America. Well, as part of that one year, last year, we asked millennials how they identify, and we did a broad spectrum of how, for everything from LQ, non-binary, genderqueer, and what we found was that 20% of millennials identify as LGBTQ. Yes. So if you think about that, at the highest rate on, and these numbers are always debated, so I just want to, because not everyone's out, right? And we still have a big problem with that in America and globally. But we average say that there's about 10% of the general population in America is LGBTQ. That's the argued number. And there are debates back and forth. Anywhere from, people have argued from 3 to 12%. So 20% identified, self-identified LGBTQ millennials is a big tectonic shift. And so they need to see themselves. And I think what's also interesting is if you juxtapose that, if you go to the next slide. Oh, this is about the category. I'm a little out of sequence here. And then if you go to the next slide.
And we can come back to that slide.
These are the great category next. Okay, we did the we do this annually. So this is the fourth year annually that we're doing this poll. And what we found was we have seven indicators that measure acceptance in America. And we do this with Harris polls. So this is general population, big study. And those seven indicators over the past 4 years have marginally moved in the positive that people have comfort around LGBTQ people. Well, this year, for the first time, we've seen all seven indicators slide backwards. All seven. And three of those seven are statistically significant slides backward. So we, in, within a year, there has been a shift in our culture, dramatic shift. You don't see culture change like that over a year. You really don't. Even when marriage equality became the law of the land, we saw a little uptick of comfort, but you don't see massive shifts like that.
And certainly lurching backwards.
Yeah.
Chris, you had a story that you shared about DOMA and your reaction to it.
Well, for me, that was where I finally said to Disney, you know, I had asked to do a same-sex couple on Doc several times and was told that they weren't ready. And I'm a very, anyone who knows me, I'm a very impatient person, and I was actually really frustrated with Disney at the time. Since everything has happened, I get it. It was a very big thing for them to do, and Disney as a brand was going to get more backlash than everyone else. But for me, it was, after DOMA, I went to Disney and I said, I can't do press anymore where I talk about how important it is to see yourself, which is obviously a main focus of Doc McStuffins, and not be able to talk about my own family. So for me, it was just saying, my marriage is legal, and I'm not going to accept us not doing this episode anymore. We need to do it. And at that point, what I want to say to Disney was all in. Look, we went out of our way to make sure that we cast Wanda Sykes and Portia de Rossi so that there could be no cold feet. I thought that through very specifically. And once Disney did it, they were all in. And guess what? Disney got a much stronger reaction than Nick did. There was no question about that. It was a thing, and doing it in preschool was a very big thing. And they were all in once we did it. But it took, you know, it always takes someone to say, I'm no longer going to accept the non-movement. And I'm kind of just saying that to all of you. I don't want to accept the non-movement anymore. We all have to put this on our radar and make these changes because we have such power in this room.
Mm-hmm. What's remarkable is there's all this content now, and yet we have an administration that's sort of, like I said, lurching backwards. And removing Obama-era protections and programs for LGBTQ students. And GLSEN's doing the work that they can, but media makes a significant difference. And just a side story, I have a team of millennials, and they were devastated by the election, and I try not to talk politics with them. Somebody was crying. After the, we were having our staff meeting. It was rough. And so we decided, we have this character, Kamala Khan, who's Muslim American from New Jersey, and we're gonna smear her like peanut butter in every show.
Right.
And then Hispanic characters. And so that we can, in some small way, counter those narratives. But you guys are doing work that's, honestly, for these networks, even more risky in terms of the backlash they could
But I think these guys are doing the biggest work, to be honest. Ours is a one-off episode because that's inherently... to me, the needle moves when it's characters you know, and the, mm-hmm. the length of your storyline. Those things are super important.
Yeah, but it's still hard, and I really admire everybody up here for what they've done. I came at it from, you know, my daughter, when she went to school, like, all the kids came out. Like, society was so far ahead of Disney. And I was doing this Disney show, and I'm like, obviously, this is going to happen. You know, this we got to do this story. And I just wasn't prepared for it to be every, you know, because they made such a big deal out of the one episode, the first episode. We got a lot of press. It was mostly positive, incredible Twitter support, outpouring from kids, parents saying, my child came out to me after watching that episode wow. with them. I mean, these things were like everything, yeah. you know.
Yeah. The press coverage, I mean, truly the Disney Channel's PR team went to town on this. And I think that impressed everybody. But I think that aggressive approach sort of offsets the negative press because it just creates this the celebration of this new thing happening. And I think you have to be assertive.
I guess I don't want to disappoint these kids now. You know, that's important to me. It is a big thing for Disney. I am proud to be the person with Cyrus on her show. I feel very lucky to be sitting up here with these people, but there are kids out there who are writing stories in which, you know, there's whole bisexual relationships with people and they have a much bigger thing that they want to see. And I can only do so much, you know. So I like hearing that that's still something.
Now, Linda, on this topic of getting it made, you shared a story when we had our prep conference call about how things were years ago.
How things were, yeah. So I'm going to guess that a lot of people in the room don't remember Postcards from Buster vividly. The year was 2004. This was a spin-off of the show Arthur, and it was a show called Postcards from Buster, where the character Buster, the bunny on Arthur, was going to be going around the United States and meeting kids, live-action, real kids and real families, and making basically little videos about them and sending them home to the kids in Elwood City. And in this particular show, the curriculum was diversity. So it was diversity. The goal of the show was to show different kids with different backgrounds and different kinds of families in different places. The interesting thing about it was receiving some government funding from the Department of Education. And in one episode, Buster goes to Vermont, and he's going to stay with some friends to see how maple sugar is made.
I was going to say, I remember it.
Yeah. So the name of the episode was Sugar Time, and the whole episode was about Buster visiting these friends and going to see them making maple sugar, which was pretty interesting. And at some point in the course of the show, you see that the kids that he's with have two moms. In Vermont, where civil unions were legal at the time, this is 2004, and the news of this episode existing got out. Before it even aired, people were calling for our heads. It was a very different time. The climate was, there was a lot of fear, a lot of anger, a lot of anger about, you know, the liberal agenda, please stop shoving this down our throats. So for these 2 minutes in this one episode in one series, there are two moms, and the story landed on the cover of the New York Times, where PBS attempted to defend the existence of these two moms in this episode.
For 2 minutes.
For 2 minutes, yeah. And it really wasn't a big part of the story. Buster says he's confused at first, and they explain how they have two moms. And he says, boy, this must be tough on Mother's Day. I have to find one gift, and that's hard. You have to get two. And then they move the story on. And these were real people. This was a real family. And so, crazy things started to happen. The new head of the Department of Education, in order to show how conservative she was, before the episode ever aired, and she knew about this episode, she wrote an editorial letter to the New York Times explaining why this was a terrible thing, and they were demanding that that WGBH refund the money spent on this episode because the government was not going to fund things like this.
Wow.
So, there we are in the New York Times defending this, and, I would say from... And the show hadn't aired at this point. Mm. No one had seen it. Anyone, editorializing about it knew nothing about it other than that it existed. Mm. And, there was so much anger, and by the end, the pressure for PBS to pull the episode before it aired became intense. So the head of PBS gave in, which was hugely humiliating to a lot of us. And then GBH distributed it. So some stations ran it, some refused to run it, and it became a very, very big story. And there were lawmakers calling for heads to roll over this. And it was shocking. And at one point I said, that's it, I'm out of here. And then a minute later I said, no, even worse, I'm staying.
So that was 14 years ago.
Yeah, that was 2004. And but the fear, and not even the fear at PBS, it's really been the fear of people pitching shows. People have been very unenthusiastic about taking this subject on. And I think one of the high points was the Fred Rogers Company. They have little live-action interstitials in Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, and one of them is about it's just a family, and you see in it that there are same-sex parents, and there's no comment made about that. It's just a little family moment, and you see these same-sex parents, and of course we got angry mail about it, and people complained, but we stood behind it. They did it, which I thought was great. And, and then I felt kind of funny, like we're being so brave, and yet it's just this little thing.
Right.
But it's a big step for us. And, at one point, the head of PBS, Paula Kerger, who at the time of Buster ran the New York station, which showed Sugar Time, she said to me, are you really still scared about that, about Buster, about what happened? And I said... No. Yes, sort of. And, because it was very traumatic. And I said, at this point, our attitude is, if people come to us and they pitch projects that have same-sex parents or touch on this issue, we are fully behind that. We will not change that. But we won't tell people to put it in, because in a lot of cases, these production companies are taking their shows out. They're selling them internationally. They have to stand behind them, and if they're not in the mood to deal with that, we can't tell them they have to go deal with that, but we won't tell people not to do it. And to that point, somebody pitched a show. It had a set of parents in it who were it was two women that were parents. No comment from anybody at PBS. So that show may get made at some point someday. It was a little too similar to something else we were doing, but. The good news was nobody responded to it negatively, and so I felt like, okay, we're making progress here. Now we just have to get other people to do that casually and just put it out there, and we are open to doing it. We won't force it on anybody, but we're not opposed to it either. So I feel like, that's this great, brave step that we've made, but it's not much. It's really not much.
But I have to say, it scarred me. It's what taught me that gay content, especially in preschool, was a third rail.
Yeah.
And I'm of course the person who would have wanted to be doing it, and I've been avoiding it for all these years because of posts, because it was so big.
It was a big story.
In the industry at the time.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, and a scary story, because there are people out there who are tracking this and are opposed to it.
Yeah.
And we're up against them. We're up against enemies, not just casual viewers, but enemies.
But I will say on that, there's a commercial for GLAAD, because we do have your back when you go out there. And if you go out there and bring us in early, we're happy to consult. We help. We give you our thoughts, our opinions, what the best way to handle it is. And then we get ahead of the press. And we've done it with Disney many times. We will get ahead of the press, and we know how to do it. And we will. And if for some reason it takes a wrong turn, we'll be there for that as well and navigate that narrative that's happening and be able to counter it quickly. And that's what we do for a living. So if you're going out there, we've got you. So bring us in, and I mean that. They all do.
I will be coming to you.
Yes.
But if not 14 years ago, why now? There's a critical mass of shows so that you can actually have an award. Mm-hmm. Press for Andy Mack was mostly popular.
I really do think we have an incredible publicity department.
Yes.
And it was like, you know, suited up, you know.
Oh,
and
they got ahead of it. They were prepared. It was positive. It was celebratory. And it made it hard for the backlash to gain a lot of traction when all the noise was positive.
Yeah. I remember thinking, okay, Kenya. Okay, and Million Moms Always, but that was...
I got them.
Me too.
Yeah, you're only 20,000 moms at best.
I didn't even know
not even close
I mean,
to
we,
that.
There was a petition that didn't get that many signatures, and then after... I mean, but everything else was so positive, and then the response from the kids on Twitter, and it was really, you know... One of the great moments of mine in television, like feeling like, I can actually do something instead of, you know, because all the times I'm thinking like my sister runs a nonprofit and all these other people do great things and what is my contribution? And it's like, it was always, you make people laugh, you know?
So, well, I think that PR success opens the door for more. And then of course the award opens the door for more. And we'll talk about the award in a minute. Because studio executives like getting awards. And more than that, they don't like it when other studio executives get awards that they don't get. So that is a significant change in the industry. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
You're doing an award.
Yes.
What was the process? So to do this.
We have to understand the category, right? Because they are, we don't give these awards out lightly at all. We don't create categories lightly. It took about 2 years to create this category.
And I think a lot of credit has to be given to Chris Nee, who spearheaded this from day one.
I just want to be clear, I spearheaded it before I had an episode to put for it.
Yeah.
I started this 3 years ago, and I wasn't allowed to do an episode.
Was it 3 years ago?
Yes.
I actually got in my office, I was just recounting this, a letter, a handwritten letter, not an email, and it was, I opened it up, and it was on Doc McStuffin, letterhead.
Oh.
And it was a handwritten note from Chris, and my kids, I have twin 9-year-olds, were super into Doc McStuffins, and I was like, ooh, the creator of Doc McStuffins wants to talk to me, all right. And we met for coffee in LA, and she said, you need a category, we need to start saying that this is really important. And then we brought our entertainment team on it, and we started evaluating the content and what was there, what wasn't there, what is award-worthy. And so we go through a whole process.
Yeah. And also, I will say that your team was really engaged with several of us. How do we name the award?
How do we position it? Because I think it's an important part of this, and if you're actually working on the content, you know. When we first talked, I remember you saying, well, you can, of course, apply and submit against, and I said, I think this is where I need you to conceptually understand that I can't say the word gay, And you want me to go up against the third transgendered lead on Transparent. Like, these are apples and oranges. And I think that was a moment for you guys to understand. We had an episode where our snowman was learning that it was okay for a real snowman to wear pink. And we knew what that was about, but that was as far as I could go at the time. But understanding all of the, like, you guys were in 2016 at the time, 2017, and we were in 1994. And we're maybe in 1995 now.
No, it was very true. It was very. I was saying, like, you can go for drama or comedy, and that's where Chris kind of put the brakes on me and said, "Well, this is false equivalencies, and that we can't compete because the it's way more sophisticated content that they can deliver than we can." Yes. And so that's where really where it's the conversation started going. And then we worked really hard. Yes, we surveyed the landscape. We talked to creators. We talked to showrunners about what was possible. Where did they see the content coming from? What was good content? What were game changers? I think there's something really interesting, too, is that, you know, a lot of stories do the parents, right? So if you're 4 or 5 or 6, do you see yourself? Do you even know who yourself is in that context? And so we had a lot of those conversations. Like, if you show parents, same-sex parents, does that count as showing kids too? And how do we decipher and delineate all of that? So it was
what
a very
does representation mean?
Exactly. And yeah, because a lot of times it's, you know, it's blink and miss it, right? But that's how you start it, right? It's casual inclusion. It doesn't have to be the protagonist out of the gate, you know? It's small steps. It's not, we don't need a full series of LGBTQ inclusion. We want people to start taking steps. And the audience is there. Like, your viewership is there. The millennials, 20% identify as LGBTQ. Gen Z, 40%. Identify not on the binary, meaning they don't identify strictly as male or female or straight or gay. They don't want labels, is basically what they've said. And so a lot of, but I know part of your audience are parents, right? So we've got that whole other agenda.
So Kevin, Chris and Terry and Linda have talked about the challenges of doing this. What was your experience?
Well, I didn't revealing create the Loud House. I came on, I think we were around episode 10, and there's a little confusion about who came up with the idea that Clyde would have two dads, but they were already in existence.
Okay. No.
We never said it. It was always my parents. The goal was to do kind of a surprise reveal. And I know Nickelodeon was behind it from the beginning, which was great, and I had the privilege of writing that episode where you meet the dads for the first time, and I kept waiting for the plug to be pulled, and it never was, and it was fine. And I think the press was so great for it that when we knew pretty much all along that we wanted one of Lincoln's sisters to come out in some way, and then this episode about them all getting a love letter just kind of fell into our laps, and another writer in the room, Carla, said, "This is our shot. Let's do it." And I remember one of our executives said, a little apprehensive, but said, okay, because when you're 14 years old, you don't really know what you want. One day you like boys, one day you like girls, one day you like cats. And I was like, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
But if that's the thinking that allows us to do this, then we'll go with that. And it was never about shoving anything down anyone's throat. It was just an acknowledgement that here is this person. The only thing that we were told was no more episodes with Sam until this one airs, because we don't know what the backlash is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then sadly, there was no backlash. The fan response was massive from the first moment. And somebody even wrote online, I hope Nickelodeon isn't effing with us right now and that Sam will be back. So we took to social media to say, oh my God, yes, but the problem is we're a year out because we're starting that episode now. So we managed
that
to, we crammed her into the background of other episodes. We put her in Loud House Comics, in shorts and podcasts. So she has a presence, but I just turned in a first draft that takes their relationship to the next level.
What is the next level? What is the next level?
The town is having a scavenger hunt, and Luna has asked Sam to be her partner to spend more time with her so they can finally get to know each other better. And then it's the two of them running around town together, discovering that what they have in common and what they don't have in common, and how their differences make their relationship better. So,
that just made me a little teary.
You know, it's funny. That's every gay couple.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, with Doc, I've had the experience of, like, often it's the parents who didn't get to see themselves, and they're saying it's so important for my daughter, but they're emotional for themselves. And that's how I feel with this. When I watched the episode where he
clip.
Came out, the first one, I watched it with my staff, and I cannot tell you what it's like and what I can imagine it's like for kids to get to see that. What I love what you're doing is the length of the storyline.
Yeah.
It's not the one-off, I come out, everyone has a problem, and at the end, yay,
everyone's
we're all better.
It,
that you really were doing this as a slow burn feels realistic. It's fantastic.
Thank you. I get a lot of... I live on Twitter just reading it, you know, people saying, like, it's so good to hear the words, I feel weird and different, and it's so, you've
amazing.
Always
yeah.
been weird, but you're no different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I just, I don't know, I, the thought of saving lives is ridiculous, but so meaningful, if true, and
it is true.
Yeah, I really, but when you say you're actually forming a couple, I mean, that's where... I think that's
unspoken at this point, but my first pitch after Ellis for Love aired was to throw them right into a one-on-one date, and our story editor wisely said, no, you know, let's find another slower way to do this, and I think it pays off better, actually. My only argument when we were creating Ellis for Love was that Luna had to be out to her family, that we wouldn't show it. She would say, I'm interested in Sam. And the family knew who Sam was and was 100% behind her. We're going to get you with Sam. And that was great.
Right. Oh. That's great. And the thing that I love most about the Loud House execution is it's done in tone with the show. It's not some sort of very special episode.
No.
Right.
It's wacky. It's just another episode of the show.
Right.
Done with the same level of humor.
And I think our story editor was right to say, let's not do a date episode for Luna and Sam specifically, because we haven't done that with any other character, really. And then it would stand out. Let's make this a townwide event where they find time to spend time together. So.
Now, Linda, did you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up Steven Universe, because I
think
a massive effect on all of this. I think that because they're not represented up here, you know, they don't get to have a say, but it's amazing how much impact that show has had. And in a very sort of casual way, you know? I mean, they've been pretty upfront about it, and it's, you know, it's very much the Cartoon Network approach of just putting it out there and being behind it and being a little rebellious, and I think that did a great thing. Yeah. And I see this with my students. I teach history of animation, and 5 years ago, they were not talking about this topic, and this past year, 3 students out of 35 wrote about the representation of gays and lesbians in kids' cartoons. And it's because 5 years ago this topic didn't exist, and now they write about Steven Universe, and they write about Darren Nefcy's show, Star versus Clarence. Yeah, and
there are
Clarence.
Actually quite a few.
And Clarence, right. Yeah. So they have things to write about now, and they can write about this, and they're not even gay students necessarily. They're just people who are interested in this topic. So I think Steven Universe has a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you bring up a question that I sort of asked earlier, but I'll ask again, why now? What are we all reacting to things that are happening politically?
I think
the networks getting more bold? Are they understanding how to handle it better? Are there more creators who are making this a priority?
I know at Disney that there are creators who have been begging.
Mm. Begging.
Yeah. But you and, people came up to me saying...
Strong voices.
Yeah.
But I think the 1-2 punch of DOMA, I mean, really sitting down with people who I know. Here's the thing. These are all good people. These are my friends. These are our friends, our executives who were saying no. They wanted to do it. It's a difficult thing to do. I think after you can say, my marriage is legal across the country, how can you say I can't talk about my family? it gives them sort of the argument to go back with. And I think that the political climate right now, we're all, no, we have to do everything we can on every element that we can do it. We have so much power in a country that needs voices to change the conversation that's out there in so many different ways. And I think that we all know, I think we're all aware of our power right now. And I think for a lot of us, we don't just want to be putting out content that doesn't make a difference right now. That's how I feel.
No, I used to, when I was on, writing for the Fairly Odd Parents and people asked me what I did for a living, I would say I write fart jokes for fairies.
Perfect for this panel.
There are worse ways to
different fairies. But yeah, what you were saying about adding a layer of meaning to what you do and not just, you make people laugh. It resonates a lot more now, just knowing that this is making a difference. But to answer your question a little bit too, the creator of The Loud House is a straight man, and he wanted a world that reflected what his kids were growing up in, where his kids' friends had same-sex parents, or he knew someone in school. He's just trying to reflect the world as it's being seen now, which in itself is just, just trying to be honest, I guess. It's lucky when you have gay creators who can take that even further, but it's nice to know that there are straight allies who are just trying to reflect the world as they see it.
And it does seem that that is one key factor, is that straight showrunners and creators just see the world as it is and want to reflect it. It actually is even Marvel's brand statement, reflecting the world that we live in. Yep. So let's take this moment to celebrate the nominees of the first ever award in this category from GLAAD.
Let's do it.
So we have some slides on that, if we could pull them up. Next slide, please.
So here they are. Yes.
Here they are.
A few you might have heard from today, but we have Andy Mack, Danger and Eggs, The Emergency Plan, which is a specific episode, Steven Universe, and The Loud House. So, I mean, it's amazing to start a category and start it full at five, right? As I was saying, studio-wide release, this is the first year in almost 30 years of doing these awards that we're finally at five. So to see this start at five is just encouraging, and I do think that in this society, in this culture, in this world that we're living in right now, where human rights are under attack, and like we haven't seen in a very long time, that using your platform and your power to storytell, to have a voice is critical right now, and we will be there to support you and to reward you for great work, and to guide you when the times get tough. So...
On their behalf, I just want to say, if it isn't clear, like literally call GLAAD if you or your programming team or your production company, at whatever stage, call them and they will meet with you and really talk you through it from whatever stage you're at.
And help you plan the PR strategy.
The process.
Right.
Yes.
And if the 1 million moms, which isn't 1 million moms, come after you, we'll fight back.
How many
we'll
is
go
it?
After
like
it.
200?
It's a few thousand.
They're very busy, though, I will say. And when they get your name, it's not that fun.
But it's funny because they got my name after the first Clyde's Dad episode aired. Yeah, and then when the second episode aired, maybe a month or two later, I went on Facebook and I was like, all right, 1 million moms, I'm back. And the executives at Nick called me and they're like, don't poke them. You don't want that. Don't go after them. So they'll handle that war. You just... write the jokes.
It's a few moms with a lot of time.
Yes. And I mentioned this at the beginning, but I think one of the remarkable things here is that the nominees, with the exception of Amazon, are from longtime kids broadcasters who traditionally have been conservative and care what groups like a million moms think and have made the bold choices. And I think that's fascinating. That's not the way I thought it would go.
There are more gay characters coming up on new Nickelodeon shows.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I'm thrilled that that's happening, that they're moving forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are also more gay executives working at those places.
More out.
More out.
I was going to say out.
More out, And I just think it's harder to say no to your executives who are sitting there, supporting somebody who wants to do something, I don't know. I think it's like people live the lives, people that you like and work with and respect, and you, why should you say no to them about their lives?
Right, and it's profitable. Yes. I mean, like, let's
These
talk
are all
about,
hit shows.
Right, it's bottom line. Talk yeah. about the bottom line is that when you are when you share inclusive content, it tends to do better. Yeah. So, I mean, if there's a business argument to be made, we have white sheets coming out the kazoo on that. So there are many, many business white sheets on the fact that when you're inclusive, it's good to the bottom line. And so they're all bottom line driven. And when they see time and time again it works, or that the formula works and it's working, they'll invest more into it. And when the backlash can be stayed, you know, at arm's length.
So I'd like to start with you, Sarah Kate. We only have a minute, 20 seconds. This has been a very full conversation. How do you hope, and then I would like to invite the rest of the panelists to talk about this, how do you hope this new award can create momentum for more LGBTQ representation in kids and family entertainment? A rather obvious question, but what are the next steps, and what can the award accomplish?
Well, this is, it's pretty historic for GLAAD to add an award. We haven't done that in several years. It takes a while to do that. And I think what I want to see is more people nominating. I want to see this category filled. I want to see this so that we have to segment the category for full episode.
Really?
Or, yeah, yeah, I mean, why not? This is the future.
Do you think you'd break it up into like preschool and tween?
We could. I mean, if we had enough content, if the content was there, we could create the categories. I mean, it could be its own award show, you know, or part of another award show that is children focused or kid and tween.
Kids' Choice Awards.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of opportunity here, and I just say keep creating the content, and we will build more awards against it and segment it.
And for each of our panelists, I'll start with Terry. What do you hope this accomplishes?
The award?
Yeah, the award
and
how it affects the work that you're able to do.
I think something like this, coming to something like this, seeing an entire full room of people, I just feel like it's a community that I, for whatever reason, feel is not as vocal, you know, as it can be.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just feel like I wish there were some way. Now I know you. But I feel like I wish there were some way for me to find all the people at Disney, all the people at the channel, and all of us having like a force or a voice instead of you going in alone, you know? I am serious. I just think that would be so much more productive. And if anybody in here works for Disney, I mean, just, I mean, I guess it's Disney Channel, really. But that's what I wish, is that there was... there were the showrunners and the writers and the people that it really mattered to who could present it as a thing that was important.
I think you're right that the dialogue is not front and center, and hopefully this will change that.
Yeah.
You know, I sat through Gina Davis's presentation on Monday, and then I gave a presentation about something that we're doing for girls, and that conversation has been continuing for years, and it's an important conversation, but this conversation hasn't happened.
Yeah. And we need a Me Too movement.
Now, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I just think right now in the world, it's very hard to be passive. I hope everyone feels that, and we all have so much power. We have so much power. We create the images that our entire country and the world sees, and whatever your issue is, get out there and fight for it right now, because we can be entertaining and fun and make money, but we should be making a difference with what we do. I get in trouble with Disney sometimes for saying kids' TV is the long con. We all need change right now, but we have the ability to really change the future. Don't give up and keep putting out what matters to you. And it may not be this issue, but think about it. Make a difference with what we're doing.
I can't follow that.
No, but it's very true. And one tiny little anecdotal thing. I've been testing boys' action adventure programming for 10 years. And the sea change for boys in terms of how they feel about girl characters in those shows, completely different. from I don't want a girl character to one boy might say I don't want a girl character, and then the eight other boys will turn to him and say, girls can kick ass too. Yeah. And that is through, and when you drill down why, it's not families, it's not school, it's Hunger Games and Black Widow, and it's television shows that they see, and that's making the difference. Yeah. Kevin.
No, go to Linda. Seriously, I can't say more than these two women have.
Well, you know, as the elder statesman, it's just amazing to be talking about this in public, you know,
yeah.
In a forum like KidScreen, and, you know, I...
And big kudos to KidScreen and Lana for, you know, yes. Embracing this panel. I mean, an instant yes. Like,
I say no?
Yeah.
You couldn't say no. I just
See, look at how relieved we all look, right? You know, it's good to talk about this, and I think that's the first step, and to talk about the award and to talk about the fact that there are five possibilities for it. It's all, you know, we're going in a direction now, and that I think that's a good thing. So, you know, I was excited to be up here. I couldn't believe after all these years this was the first of this panel. It was kind of amazing to realize. But, you know, it's great to be doing it. And, you know, I'm excited to be up here with all of you nominees. And, so thank you, Chris, for suggesting this. Thank you, Court, for moderating.
Thank you, Court.
Yes.
Worked very hard on this.
Well, first, thank you to all of our panelists for participating in what is really a revolutionary conversation held for the very first time. And for everybody who joined us, straight allies and gay creators, to be part of this discussion too. It's kind of a new day, and it's very exciting. And the responsibility is on all of us to keep the conversation moving forward. And to make shows and to make characters and to make a difference. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.